Ukraine's critical infrastructure has taken a massive hit.
It cut power to more than 1 million people across the country and more than 500,000 in neighboring Poland.
Cryptocurrency investors have hope under the new Trump administration.
If crypto is going to define the future, I want to be mined, minted, and made in the USA.
And Australia clamps down on social media access.
We know there is widespread concern and evidence about the severe mental health impact of social media on children.
Today is Friday, November 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Alexis Strope. Ukraine's Interior Ministry said damage to infrastructure facilities was reported in 9 regions across the country after Russia's latest attack. Reuters correspondent Rachel Graham has more.
Russia unleashed its second big attack on Ukraine's energy infrastructure this month on Thursday. It cut power to more than 1 million people across the country and more than 500,000 in neighboring Poland, according to Ukrainian government officials. Ukraine, which gets more than half of its electricity from nuclear plants, had disconnected several nuclear power units from the network during the attack, said a source in the energy sector. And state oil and gas firm Naftogaz said its facilities had been attacked in the morning strikes. Dozens of families in a village near Odessa were left homeless after missiles destroyed houses near a local power substation. In Lviv, the hum of generators filled the streets as businesses resorted to producing their own electricity in order to keep doors open. Alexei Kuznetsov works in a pub.
They started to switch off the electricity more often lately. Now there is no electricity. We set up the generator, turn it on. It's enough for the pub to operate, a little slower, but anyway, we make it work.
Mykolaiv residents faced similar challenges. This man says he fears for pensioners living on upper floors of apartment blocks who will be forced to carry water up many flights of stairs while lifts are out of order. The attack reinforced fears of long power cuts during the winter months as temperatures across Ukraine hover around freezing. Officials across the country said they were turning on generators to ensure emergency heat and water supplies to hospitals, schools and other critical facilities during bitter winter weather. Ukrainian officials said it was the 11th major strike on the energy system since March. Russia has knocked out about half of Ukraine's available generating capacity during the course of the war, damaged the distribution system, and forced authorities to impose long blackouts.
That was Reuters correspondent Rachel Graham. As Russian strikes continue to pound Ukraine, President-elect Donald Trump has taken a step forward concerning the war and his upcoming administration. On Wednesday, he announced on his Truth Social platform he has tapped retired Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg to serve as special envoy for Ukraine and Russia. Kellogg was the chief of staff for the White House National Security Council during Trump's first term and national security advisor for then-Vice President Mike Pence. Quickly winding down the war was one of Trump's central promises on the campaign trail, though he's avoided discussing details. VOA spoke with Kellogg in June about how he would attempt to end the war.
So the question is, okay, where do you want to make sure that the infrastructure keeps getting beaten up? You know, women and children keep getting shot up. You got to figure a way to stop it. Or do you want to keep it going with no clear end in sight? And again, it's very important. It's like what we call in America a foot stomp. That does not mean that Ukraine surrenders. That does not mean they give up the territory. Nothing like that at all. What it does mean is let's figure a way, as President Trump has said, to stop the killing, because that's probably the most important piece of this whole deal that we're looking at and we need to help.
Kellogg's plan involves freezing the battle lines at their prevailing locations and forcing Kyiv and Moscow to the negotiating table. The U.S. would tell Ukraine that it would receive more American weapons only if it enters peace talks. At the same time, it would warn Moscow that refusal to negotiate would mean increased U.S. support for Ukraine, and NATO membership for Ukraine would be taken off the table for the immediate future. For a look at the reaction in Ukraine to Kellogg's appointment as special envoy to Ukraine and Russia, and what's happening on the ground in Ukraine since the latest strikes from Russia, I spoke with VOA's Anna Chernikova in Kyiv.
Well, I should say that the first reaction was a really, you know, positive feedback due to the fact itself that President Trump and Trump administration decided to actually have this special person appointed and the special person being responsible for Ukrainian and Russian issues. So people here in Ukraine have, you know, this hope that the appointment as well as the person who was appointed was the author of this, you know, ideas of how to end the war. This is a demonstration that President Trump is actually very serious about ending this war. If we talk about official reaction, it was not particularly an official reaction, you know, to the appointment, but I can say that lately President Zelensky, as well as a number of Ukrainian defense officials, were talking about the fact that President Trump, after his inauguration in January, will actually take more steps forward and more actions to fulfill what he said during his campaign, and the main thing that everyone is discussing here, and President Zelensky is repeating again and again, that President Trump will be following the path of peace through strength, and this is what Ukrainians actually like a lot. And President Zelensky, lately in almost all of his speeches, he's repeating this, that peace through strength is the only way with Russia. So, in general, this is kind of a, you know, reaction that what is happening here in the country.
And so amid all of this hope for peace and hope from a new U.S. administration, there were massive strikes on Ukrainian infrastructure. What has the effect been on the ground?
The latest attack was actually really, really big, and it was probably one of the biggest lately, which was involving both drones and missiles, and which actually affected critical infrastructure, energy infrastructure particularly. What I can tell, that my personal experience, I was during the attack, I was in Kyiv, and I was hearing a lot of air defense sounds, and actually it was seen from the window, the sparks, the explosions of air defense hitting drones particularly, and sound of drones approaching was close to my apartment building. So the air raid alert was on for at least 8 hours during the night, and it was quite you know, a noisy night. During the day, the electricity outages were across the country for at least 8 hours of outage in Kyiv and Kyiv region. So the situation is really tough. Situation is difficult. As we are talking now, here at my place, we do have electricity for the past 2 hours, but the outage should happen soon again. So during the night, we do not expect to have any electricity. And in the morning, well, hopefully it will be back. And in general, as I was also walking through the town, through the city today, you know, the sound of this petrol generators working is around. So all little and middle and big businesses working with generators on. And this is again the repeat of the previous winter seasons when the generators were around, but this time Ukrainians are actually prepared. So people just, you know, continue to live as much as possible and continue to survive as much as possible, using all means of technology possible as well.
Anna Chertakova, thank you very much for all your insight today, and please be safe.
Thank you so much.
And here are some other stories we're following from around the world. Three American citizens jailed for years in China arrived in the United States late Wednesday as part of a prisoner swap between Washington and Beijing. All three Americans had been designated as wrongfully detained. The swap, which the White House announced earlier Wednesday, marked a rare diplomatic agreement between the United States and China. Beijing announced Thursday the United States has returned four people to China, including at least three Chinese citizens whom Beijing said were held for political purposes. The fourth was an individual sought by Beijing for crimes who had been living in the United States. At least 15 people died and 113 others are missing after landslides buried homes in six villages in eastern Uganda. Uganda police say that 15 injured people had been rescued and admitted to Bulaganya Health Center. Local media reports say authorities expect the death toll could rise to 30. Venezuelan lawmakers have approved a bill that codifies economic sanctions, like those imposed by the United States, as a crime against humanity and allows the prosecution of anyone who expresses support for the measures. Thursday's move follows the White House's decision to impose sanctions on dozens of individuals it accused of undermining Venezuela's July presidential election. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Alexis Strobe. Turning now to U.S. politics and excitement in the cryptocurrency community. Cryptocurrency investors have big hopes for the approaching presidency of Donald Trump, who campaigned this year as a champion of digital currencies. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns has our story.
Campaigning for president, Donald Trump compared the Bitcoin community to the power of U.S. steel 100 years ago.
But this is the kind of spirit that built America, and this is the spirit that's going to help us make America great again.
Trump says he'll make the United States the crypto capital of the planet.
If crypto is going to define the future, I want to be mined, minted, and made in the USA.
Following Trump's win, Bitcoin values reached record highs. Digital currency investors are encouraged by Trump's promises to loosen crypto oversight by the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, where market analyst Garrick Heilman says Joe Biden's administration used tighter controls to keep out some bad actors.
It did arguably have a chilling effect on fraudsters wanting to come into crypto. So if you now introduce a light touch arena, you could have this kind of boomerang effect where even more fraud and crime take place, which has a very negative effect on people looking to adopt this as a real asset.
Trump's pro-crypto team is also looking at other policy changes to support the industry, says market analyst Susanna Streeter.
The policies that they have put forward include building up a strategic reserve of Bitcoin and crypto and other cryptocurrencies, because assets are seized from criminals, but they have been sold off. But the idea behind this would be to not just hang on to these assets, but add to them in the next few years.
Streeter says Trump's approach appears more in line with crypto's interests to keep the industry largely decentralized.
The team has also appeared to knock back suggestions of a central bank digital currency, effectively a digital dollar, that actually could lead to even more centralization of the currency, which is certainly not supported by the crypto industry.
And then there's Elon Musk, whose Tesla electric vehicle company owns a significant amount of Bitcoin. Musk joined the Trump campaign in its final month and will now co-chair the incoming government's efforts to improve efficiency.
I haven't been politically active before. I'm politically active now because I think the future of America and the future of civilization is at stake.
Heilman says Musk will be central to an expected Trump pump, building enthusiasm for crypto.
You know, he's a big fan of Dogecoin, which is a meme coin, which aligns with his philosophy that the most entertaining outcome, I guess, is the most likely outcome.
Digital currencies still face obstacles to wider acceptance, with Pew Research Center data last month showing that nearly two-thirds of Americans say they have little to no confidence that current ways to invest in, trade, or use cryptocurrencies are reliable and safe. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
Meanwhile, President-elect Trump's threats of tariffs still loom over North America. Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum said on Wednesday Mexico would retaliate if Trump followed through with his proposed 25% across-the-board tariff, a move her government warned could kill 400,000 U.S. jobs and drive up prices for U.S. consumers. Reuters correspondent Gabe Singer has the story.
In case there are tariffs, Mexico would also raise tariffs. So it is a technical move that would also represent benefits for Mexico in the event of a situation like this.
Trump's proposed tariff could violate the terms of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement on Trade, which the country signed in 2020 when Trump was president. That deal continued the largely duty-free trade between the three countries. Sheinbaum said she was confident the agreement would stand. Mexican Economy Minister Marcelo Ebrard, speaking alongside Sheinbaum, said the tariff hike would deliver a hard blow to the automotive sector's top cross-border exporters, including Ford, General Motors, and Stellantis. Ebrard noted that nearly 90% of pickup trucks sold in the U.S. are made in Mexico and would see a price increase. These vehicles are popular in rural areas that overwhelmingly voted for Trump. Sheinbaum and Trump spoke by phone later on Wednesday, with the two discussing topics at the top of Trump's agenda. In a post on Truth Social, Trump said Sheinbaum, quote, agreed to stop migration through Mexico and into the United States, effectively closing our southern border. He described the conversation as very productive. Sheinbaum later responded on X that on the call she had laid out Mexico's migration strategy, which, quote, attended to migrants before they arrived at the U.S.-Mexico border. She added, quote, Mexico's stance is not to close borders, but to build bridges between governments and their peoples.
Reuters correspondent Gabe Singer reporting for us. Romania's top security agency said Wednesday it is investigating possible foreign interference in Sunday's first round of the presidential election. The far-right candidate, Calin Georgescu, won easily with almost 23% of the vote, despite being well behind in the polls. As Henry Ridgewell reports, Georgescu has questioned Western support for Ukraine in its war against Russia's invasion.
Protesters have taken to the streets of Bucharest in recent days following the shock victory for the hard-right candidate, Calin Georgescu, in the first round of Romania's presidential election on Sunday. Uma, a student in Bucharest who did not want to give her family name, was among the protesters.
Calin Georgescu, an extremist, a far-right extremist, who is a pro-Russian, wants to take Romania away from the NATO course.
Georgescu was polling in the single figures before Sunday's vote, and there are suspicions of foreign manipulation. Romania's Supreme Defense Council is set to meet Thursday to discuss, in its words, possible risks to national security generated by the actions of state and non-state cyber parties. Authorities have also urged the European Union to investigate the role TikTok played in the vote. Georgescu has questioned NATO and Europe's support for Kyiv in its war against Russian invaders. Romania hosts several thousand US troops and shares a border with Ukraine. In a video streamed on social media Tuesday, Georgescu, alongside his wife Cristela, sought to clarify his positions.
I don't want to leave NATO,
I don't want to leave the European Union. What I want, however, is to take a stance, not to kneel over there, not to take everything. We should do everything in our national interest.
Georgescu has urged Western engagement with Russia, echoing other right-wing European leaders such as Hungary's Viktor Orban. Young and overseas voters appear to have boosted Georgescu's result, but he tried to appeal to a range of voters, says analyst Magdin.
On social media, he was dominant on TikTok compared with other candidates. His vision is mostly conservative, traditionalist. He invokes God quite a lot as well.
Georgescu will face centre-right presidential candidate Elena Lasconi in a runoff on December 8th. Romanians will also vote in parliamentary elections on December 1st. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News.
In a November interview, Morocco's foreign minister said his country plans to bring Central Sahel countries like Burkina Faso, Niger, and Mali out of isolation with a joint development and port access package known as the Atlantic Initiative. As they battle militants linked to terror groups, Central Sahel countries have turned away from regional and international partners. So what can their neighbors do to reach out to them? Henry Wilkins reports.
Central Sahel countries Burkina Faso, Mali and Niger are continuing their fight against militant groups, which has spread instability across the region. In the last 2 years, they have cut ties with France and the United States, which gave military assistance, and the West African political bloc ECOWAS, which includes many of their closest trading partners. The Central Sahel's military juntas said all three were a hindrance in their efforts to defeat the militants. In a November interview, Morocco's foreign minister said the country is attempting to break the region out of isolation. Bakary Sambe is the regional director of the Timbuktu Institute.
The launch of this Atlantic initiative, which aims to connect coastal countries and provide the Sahel nations with Atlantic access, is part of Morocco's plan to leverage its historical ties as well as strategic interests.
Ses liens historiques, mais aussi ses intérêts stratégiques.
Paul Melly, a consulting fellow for Chatham House, says that although Morocco is a significant economic force and has a strategic interest in regional stability in West Africa, its geographical position may make the initiative difficult.
The economics of using Moroccan ports. You know, you either go round through Mauritania, in which case it's an incredibly wrong way, or else you go across the Sahara. I think it would mean going through Mauritania, at which point, you know, it's geographically a very long way round.
Melly points out that security conditions make the Sahara route dangerous. Despite chilly relations, the landlocked Central Sahel countries still rely heavily on bordering coastal nations like Senegal, Benin, Ghana, Togo and Ivory Coast for port access. Sambe of the Mali-based Timbuktu Institute says cultural diplomacy may be more effective.
Morocco can still play a role in preventing violent extremism and combating terrorism by training imams and promoting a tolerant version of Islam as an alternative to religious extremism.
Par rapport à l'extrémisme religieux.
Sambe urged the coastal states to take a long-term view of relations and bear in mind that military hunters are likely a passing phase in the region's history. Henry Wilkins, VOA News.
And finally, Australia approved on Thursday a ban on social media for children under age 16 after an emotional debate that has gripped the nation, setting a benchmark for jurisdictions around the world with one of the toughest regulations targeting big tech. Sean Hogan from Reuters reports.
Those for the question say aye.
Aye.
Against, no.
Aye.
I think the ayes have it.
Social media will soon be banned for under 16-year-olds in Australia after a new law sets a benchmark with one of the world's toughest regulations targeting big tech. It forces tech giants from Instagram and Facebook owner Meta to TikTok to stop minors logging in or face fines of up to $32 million.
We know there is widespread concern and evidence about the severe mental health impact of social media on children. We've seen
a parliamentary inquiry this year heard evidence from parents of children who self-harmed due to social media bullying. Domestic media backed the ban, led by Rupert Murdoch's News Corp.
I'll quickly pull it up.
16-year-old user Annie Lamb acknowledges its potential harm, but says it is deeply ingrained in society and the law will force young people to more dangerous parts of the internet.
With such like a clear-cut ban, I believe that it will only create a generation of young people who will be more technologically literate in bypassing these, like, walls.
The ban also faced opposition from privacy advocates and some child rights groups, but 77% of the population wanted it, according to latest polls. Speaking on behalf of social media platforms, Australia's Digital Industry Group Managing Director Sunita Bose said the bill was rushed through Parliament.
In some ways it's cart before horse because we have the bill, but we don't have guidance from the Australian government around what are the right methods that a whole host of services subject to this law will need to employ.
In submissions, Google and Meta said the ban should be delayed until an age verification trial finishes, expected in mid-2025. The country will be watched as a test case, as a growing number of governments look to implement similar legislation.
Today I can announce that
the ban, considered a political win for Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, could strain Australia's relationship with key ally the United States.
Come here.
Ex-owner Elon Musk, a central figure in President-elect Donald Trump's administration, said in a post this month it seemed a backdoor way to control access to the internet by all Australians. Australia has also made social media platforms pay media outlets royalties for sharing their content, and now plans to threaten them with fines for failing to stamp out scams.
That was Reuters correspondent Sean Hogan. And that'll wrap it up for today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Alexis Strobe. Thanks for listening.